All right, welcome back to the final hour of Cancel the Cabal on Revolution Radio and PSN Radio. I'm Stephen Roberts. I did want to mention, I need to have a little piece of paper right here in front of me for every so often here to mention that we are listener supported at Revolution Radio, and everyone doing this internet radio is listener supported. Looks like almost 2,000 of the 2650 has been raised so far to keep the streams going there. I know all of the bandwidth can get very, very expensive, but if you like what we're doing here, please go hit that donate button. I was hoping to get Billy McGuire, president of the IRB over there in Ireland, Irish Republican Brotherhood, on for the 2 hours, but his weekends are filled with so many things and so many meetings. He talks to hundreds and hundreds of people on the weekends, and Ireland is 5 hours ahead of us in the east. It's a little past 9 p.m. over there, so, and he is getting older. He's up there near 80 years old. I remember him mentioning he took over from his father in 1964. That was the year I was born, 52 years ago. So he's not a kid anymore. He's not a spring chicken. But I was able to wrangle Patrick to come on for the other hour, because I was hoping Billy would fill the entire 2 hours. But I'm sure he's a little tired. So welcome, Patrick.
Thank you, Stephen. How are you?
I'm good today. It's nice and sunny where I'm at. It's like 72 degrees here.
Well, I was listening for a good part of the show, and he's quite a guest. You're going to be getting a real lowdown about some things that you would not otherwise. When I was in Ireland, I was remember watching TV, and there was this former IRA fellow talking about some things that were, well, rather shocking, but I guess that's the nature of the beast when you're, quote-unquote, at war with something or somebody. And so it was, I mean, I'd gone to a bar after that and even heard people sitting there talking about it because they had heard it too. And I was getting differing opinions on it. And this was in Galway, and I was in a bar in Salt Hill, which is like a real close suburb.
Right.
And this was back in 1998. So something had just changed, opened up or something to where things could be said without prosecution, etc., apparently. And that was real interesting, and he was a very interesting guest, and I would look forward to your getting him next week, because he's good stuff.
He is, and I wish he could get his broadband back, because he does have Skype, but they've taken it away from him, and they even took his home phone away from him. All he has is a cell phone.
He's under duress somehow. He's being punished or monitored, or
I'm certain, yes.
Like wearing an ankle?
No, nothing like that. He's it's just a system attacking the leader of the resistance over there, and he's basically seen as the leader.
Well, I thought everything, I guess I'm thinking wrong, but I thought everything had kind of quieted down. I didn't know things were heating up again as such, and at least enough to, you know, have them do something like that to him. He should be able to have his internet if he wants it. Good heavens. I mean, believe me, if you're going to want to be communicating stuff on that level, you're not going to be using the internet to do it. Unless you have some hellish complicated code that wouldn't be worth the trouble to try and even invent, much less decipher. So, you know, what are you going to do with it? Yeah, we're real secretive right here, aren't we?
Well, you know, he's not the first, and he's probably not going to be the last of any sort of resistance leader that is under fire and being attacked.
Oh, no doubt. I'm sure you're correct on that one. I could add a thing or two about station things, just for what it's worth, because it could help the station.
Okay.
Besides our normal jumbo seed pack for $100 and our bullet drive for $50, if I'm on the radio, you'll hear me nailing on it. This month only, and in the USA only, for $50, you get a 1 ounce silver bar, and it's a small end good. It's the same type of silver that silversmiths use. It's 999, which is 99.9% pure. It's as pure as it gets. And the way things have been going in the last week or so, it's not a bad idea to be holding silver. And so we give as good as we get, and we appreciate it. And if everybody could only give $5 or $10, as rough as times are, that would just get us through and more. We would be ahead 2 months. So about it. Get into your pockets and help us out, please. It's easy to do.
Yes. Yes, it is. And it's so easy for someone to sit out there and listen to an internet station and criticize us for donations, but they just don't.
Well, at least we're not demanding that they pay before they can even
yes.
watch, just like some people we know.
Yes, so. Exactly. You pay to you have to pay just to even listen or to watch to watch some content out there.
No, yeah, I pay enough for my internet every month, and that gets it. You know, I have had the money in the past to donate to the station. It's just I'm tight now. You know, but who knows? I might even do something crazy.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned you went to Ireland in 1999. I have yet to leave the continental United States. I've been to Canada and I've been to Mexico, but I haven't been overseas yet. And that's one thing I do want to do before they start restricting us. And
yeah, you really should. This all was in the 90s when this was pre 9/11, and things were free and easy and nice and happy. And
you weren't considered a terrorist back then, were you?
No, I was a tourist. And I was in France twice, and I was in Ireland once, and I was even in England, but that was only at Gatwick Airport, so that really doesn't count, I don't think. I mean, if I had thought about it, I might well have just got off and stayed in England and done Wessex, Somerset, and Dorset, and Devon, and then hopped across, and I'd love to go to Wales. So, but Ireland was the destination, and that, you know, I play a lot of Irish music and stuff. And so it was where, I mean, I even brought my fiddle with me, and that was like bringing coals to Newcastle, but
right.
What the heck, I did it anyway.
Yeah. I have a friend that's a, actual descendant of, Winston Churchill. His last name is Churchill. I think he said he's like a seventh or eighth cousin or something like that. And he said he never has to buy a beer when he goes over there. So, you know, there can be some perks, I guess.
Yeah. Well, when what, he goes to England? Or?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Because he might have to buy his beer in Ireland. He may not want his name known if he went to a pub.
A good possibility of that, yes.
Uh-huh.
And I also have this feeling, Patrick, that I might not want to come back if I do go over there for... You know, for, I don't know, just the purpose of being over there at an older culture and a more civilized culture than what it is over here in America.
Oh, you feel it. And you get out in the West and the atmosphere is so thick, the magic is there. You can almost grab it out the air. I had weird things happen. I was going there for, I mean, otherworldly things happened. And, so yeah, it's well worth it to go check it out. Like whiskey bottles.
Sorry. Yeah, I was typing something in the chat there. Okay. WD and Irish said that Winston was conceived 7 miles from him.
Well, Winston's mom was either Canadian or American. She was American.
She was an American.
Yeah.
The way, I do remember something about that now, Patrick. I seen something just a couple months back.
When I hear recordings of him speaking, it's kind of scary. He didn't have a real pretty voice.
It was a raspy old man's voice, I guess, what you might say.
It didn't seem to bode well. Whatever. But, your last name, Roberts, is often Welsh. And not that you may or may not.
Well, you are, the way I understand it, there was an MC on the front of it way back when, and
the Irish.
When my ancestors come over here, and I believe my aunt said it was from Isle of Man. There's a little island right in between.
For the audience, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a little island right in between Ireland and the UK. It's called the Isle of Man. And apparently that's where my ancestors came from way back when. And somehow they seem to have dropped the Mick off of it, probably because of the persecution of the Irish over here in America.
Right, no Irish need apply.
Yeah.
I remember that. They speak Manx there, and that's a rapidly, it's going extinct rather quickly.
Uh-huh.
And there's some Norse in it, and there's something different about the way they write it, but it's fairly close to Irish in the vocabulary. And the whole motorcycle race is there.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a Manx cat, that cat with no tail, with the long hind legs.
Sure, okay.
And so it's a Manx.
Yeah, a lot of interesting stuff. Apparently there's 75 plus million Americans that have Irish descent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can't find much. Now, there's 1/16 of me that's a mystery, but I can't find there's just one or two Irish. It's interesting. I have a good deal more Scots, and the Scots are actually Irish, but they were from Scotland.
Cousins, yeah.
And they came over across from Ulster into Kintyre. But the weird thing about it was that all these Irish who went into Scotland, they weren't from Ulster. They were from Kerry, way in the southwest. And that's a strange thing to think of, and this huge eruption of people coming all the way through Ireland and then crossing at the Giant's Causeway, because you can see Scotland, it's about 12 miles, and just getting in boats and going over. And it took the Scots to conquer the Picts. Nobody could take them. No one was able to put them down, and the Irish got there, and they conquered the Picts. And that's why we know so little of the Pictish culture, aside from some standing stones, and it looks like they were horsemen.
Well,
because they were just so totally assimilated by the Irish who conquered them.
You do know that the winners get the right history.
Yeah, But what's also interesting is that the king of the Picts, his name was Angus MacFergus, and so there was certainly some relation there. They were probably speaking the same language or something very close.
Certainly, yeah.
And the Irish are basically pretty fair, and they'll tell the truth about things, even though the winners do write the history. But the losers can get their stories in, too, here and there. And, that's what we're all about, getting the whole story for you, Right?
Oh, yes.
With Billy Maguire and everything. Well, of course, they did finally conquer, and Ireland got its republic status.
I got to say something here, Patrick. WD and Irish there, he said the Scots have haggis and magus. Just haggis anyways. That is one dish I need to try. I actually seen something on some TV show that how they make haggis, and something I want to try. I guess it's very good, but
well, I think it varies on the opinion with the opinion.
Yeah.
We have, I'm in Cajun country down on the bayou.
Oh, I love Cajun food.
and the Cajuns, I'm only 1/16 Cajun. I'm like a quarter French and a quarter of that is Cajun. So you know, I'm primarily English, but we have something that is what I would call the Cajun haggis, and it's called boudin. And it's made pretty much like haggis, except rice rather than oatmeal is used.
Okay, yeah.
But it's very highly spiced, probably more so than haggis.
I'm sure.
And haggis, I think, is fatter. It's like, you know, 3 inches in diameter, while boudin is only about an inch. But it looks like sausage, but actually that's because it's blown into this sausage balloon skin.
Right, right.
But with haggis, they get a bagpiper and they pipe it in to the room. He's playing the pipes while the haggis is being carried into the room. So it's quite the deal.
All ceremonial, right?
Oh, very. Yeah. Uh-huh. And apparently it's enjoyed enough. You know, you are faced in Scotland, you're faced with two things. You're faced with learning Scottish Gaelic, which is very, very close to Irish Gaelic, but neither are easy languages. Or you find yourself in the Lowlands, and then they're speaking what's known as Middle Scots, and that's the language of Robert Burns, and that's not that easy to read either, because there's all sorts of funny words in the vocabulary. I mean, it's like a very old version of English that kind of went off and developed on its own in Scotland. And I find if you've ever seen old Frisian, it reads like Frisian, F-R-I-S-I-A-N, but it's pronounced Frisian. And old Frisian is the closest Germanic language I've ever seen to the English we speak. Far, far closer than quote unquote old English. And if you look at Middle Scots, and if you've seen some Frisian, you're going to see a lot of the same words. It's very interesting.
Well, I believe there's some village over there. I've actually talked to somebody that said they went over to Ireland and they went somewhere up in the north or maybe up in the east or something. And they went into a little village and they started encountering people that had more of an American accent or maybe even a Canadian. And
now that's interesting you say that, because up around in Fife they will speak, it's not a separate language, it's a dialect, and it's known as Doric, D-O-R-I-C, and I don't know a thing about it, I just know of it.
Uh-huh.
And maybe that's something that was run into with regard to what you just said, but I cannot be sure.
Yeah, you know, it's been so long ago since I talked to this man, but he said he went over there and went into the village. Wasn't really I guess they would call it a village over there, a small town over here maybe, and started going into the shops and the stores and started to encounter the people that sounded American, and he was just put about.
Well, maybe he was hearing tourists.
No, he said okay. No, they were regular townspeople, and
okay, I had to say
they had an American accent. Like,
well, you know, it's funny because when I was in France and I was in Lyon and we were being put up, I was playing fiddle with this group. And it was like a song, dance, folklore troupe. And we just played for our supper. We didn't get paid, but we were well taken care of wherever we went. We toured the whole country. And it was in Lyon. And the young lady I was staying with and her husband, she had picked me up in the car from the train station. And we were talking. And her English wasn't too bad at all. And she made this funny and rather accurate observation, at least with regard to a northern, say, Chicago accent. And I can't replicate it here, but what she said is that you Americans sound like you're chewing bubble gum while you talk.
Yeah.
But French being what it is, you know, that's a trip itself. I know a good deal of it since I made a point of studying it, but I'm not fluent. I can't sit here and speak French to you, but I know a lot about it, and I can read it. I've even read a book in French, the entire book. It was about the Beast of Gévaudan or Gévaudan. But that's another story entirely.
Uh-huh.
Strange story.
Do most of your travels come from your musician past?
In my later life, they have. I'll be 65 in July. So let's see. It was in the late 90s. I was like 47, and I went back when I was just before I turned 50. I went back to France. And between that time, in 98, I went to Ireland, and that was not with the group, but the two French trips were. And then in 99, we went to Nova Scotia and Cape Breton Island, and that was with the group. And in 2000, we went to Berea, Kentucky. And I think before that, in the spring, we had gone to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, to a festival there. And so, yeah, all those travels have been with and for the group, which is kind of fun, really, you know.
Uh-huh.
Together and entertain people, and it pulls the best out of you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Is Hawk is Hawk having some sort of a get together this year, or a shindig or something? Or
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the status of that is at this part. We will be made aware if there is one, though, because if and when they happen, it's late summer into the fall.
He has that down in Kentucky somewhere, doesn't he? Or
yeah.
Okay.
So it's actually not too far from you. It's like a 12-hour drive one way for me.
Yeah. I can actually reach the Kentucky line in about 5 hours, yes.
I like Kentucky. I mean, I love Berea. I could have just stayed there. Berea College is an amazing place. And
I think Louisville is like 250 miles from me, so.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, it's about 5 hours. And you get down into Lexington, and then you go down to Richmond, and then next thing you know, you're in Berea. And then if you take a left as you head south, you wind up at the start of the Appalachian Mountains. And that's deep into Melungeon territory.
What's that?
The Melungeons are tri-racial isolates. And there are any number of them located hither and yon about the United States. And they're called like the Brass Ankles and the Melungeons.
Triracial.
Yeah, triracial, because you have typically it's Caucasian and Negroid and First Nations mixed, hence triracial.
Okay.
That varies. It's not always that mix exactly. With the Melungeons, there's a lot of Native American and Caucasian for sure. And there's also some curiosity and unsureness about who really was in America at the time of Columbus's arrival. And we all know that Europeans had been here before, but it's kind of odd that up in the mountains they call a watch a sots.
Okay.
And that's a Turkish word.
Yeah.
So, and then yeah. You see the Eastern Indians wearing robes. And that is not typical. So,
I wanted to get your thoughts on, just this subject here. I've heard for quite a few years that a lot of hidden archaeology being suppressed, that allegedly Caucasian people were here in America like close to 100,000 years ago.
Oh, easily. Well, the occult wisdom teaches that this part of the world, America, Turtle Island, was a center of great civilization and learning before the time of Atlantis. So it stood in the middle of Lemuria, and Atlantis was where we are in America.
Yeah.
And Do you ever listen to Ahmad Painter's show on Monday night? He and Mark Eddy.
I didn't even know he did a show on Monday nights.
Oh, they deal with that. They deal with that exclusively.
Huh.
The hidden history of America.
Hidden archaeology, yeah.
Yeah, and they have some very interesting guests on. It's at 10 o'clock Eastern on Studio A.
Okay. Normally, I'm busy on Monday nights, but I might have to check that out.
Yeah, it's worth it. If you're into this, you're going to hear some very interesting things. I mean, and it's all over the country. They ramble everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And Mark is quite knowledgeable, and so is Thomas, Ahmad, about all this stuff.
Yeah.
And because I know Ahmad has had a fascination for it for a long time. And I remember when I was living in New Hampshire, I ran into something once that was very odd.
What's that?
Well, I was back of Hillsborough Village, the Upper Village, and I was out in the middle of nowhere, and you make a hard left right at this transformer. It's a little tiny two-lane road, and then the hill goes up. It's definitely a kind of a steep incline, and as I made my turn, I felt like someone was looking at me.
Uh-huh.
So I turned my head to the right, and there up the hill was this rock, this boulder. But I'll be darned if it didn't look like there was a face carved on it. And I even, if not that time, it was another time, because I knew to go back and check on it. And I assume, I hope it's still there. And I'd know where to go look. But I just walked up the hill on how to look at it. And if that's natural, that's the oddest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, it had the brow ridge and a place where the eyes would be, and a nose. And it's a bit rough, admittedly, but nonetheless, it's kind of unmistakable.
Right, right.
I felt like something was looking at me. It looked like a face, and this was out of the corner of my eye.
Yeah, you know, these stories go back in history. A lot of the folklore, or a lot of the tales, say that people have seen what they would describe as woodsman-like people, or people of the woods. They would say that it looked like a tree was actually walking or moving or something like that. And
ants, huh?
I'm sorry?
Ants.
Ants. I'm not sure.
Yeah, ants from Lord of the Rings, Tolkien. The ants, they were tree shepherds, and they were great.
Right,
big,
right. Okay, yeah.
And they could walk, and they would shepherd the trees.
Yeah.
Do you remember that part?
I do, yes. I just...
An ant.
The name wasn't familiar to me, but yeah, I do now, yes. Well, I guess what I actually meant was there were people that were... might be able to morph into... not so much people, but some sort of a being, maybe. Beings of the woods.
Really?
Yeah.
That's quite interesting. I think that Lady Horse could really tell you a heck of a lot more about these kind of things than I could. What with to do with the First Nations legends and up around the Great Lakes and into Canada and the North. And there's all kind of interesting things that are being kept from us. I mean, I'm sure they're just warehouses at the Smithsonian with stuff. The last thing, if you find something, the last thing you ever want to do
is tell someone,
scientists or the Smithsonian Institute. Uh-huh. Oh, no.
Yep.
No, that's like, if you see a flying saucer, go tell the police. I don't think so.
That'll be your downfall. Yeah.
No, I mean, I saw a flying saucer one morning, or whatever it was. It was flying. It was an object. And I didn't know what it was. So it was truly a UFO, an unidentified flying object. And the only person I told was my mom.
The British orcs took all our trees. From WD and Irish.
Yeah. That's true. And then it could have been some of the older Irish people had a hand in cutting down some of them too, at least in spots. But there's something about the west of Ireland where few trees grow, but the hills, they take on this mountainous form, and whereas the highest is only 3,000 feet, which is not high for any kind of mountainish.
Right.
They look like the Himalayas. I mean, or in that direction at any rate. They're huge. And there's this poetry to their shape that is just unmatched anywhere. And the fact that they rise out of the sea rather than being in the middle of a plain that's already 5,000 feet above sea level. There's no lie about their real height. And it's, oh my God, look at that.
Well, the way I understand it, Patrick, there are plenty of areas in Europe that both England and Rome, you know, they pretty much butchered the land of the trees in that.
And that's what these empirical civilizations tend to do. And when the Normans conquered England, there was what was called the harrowing of the North. But I need to read more about that to see exactly what that implied, because I don't know if it meant cutting trees a lot or just cutting down rulerships and instituting themselves, which is probably closer to the truth. So my last name being Brown, that's a Norman name. And so it makes me curious. And the Normans were an interesting bunch, too. Because unlike most people who go conquer a place like they did to France, who would then institute their language and mores upon the people, the Normans conquered their way into France and then did the exact opposite and became French. They were speaking French when they got to England. And the funny thing about all the Normans who went to Ireland, and they're known as the Norman Irish, and they came in with Richard Leclerc, a Strongbow, around 13-something. It's 12 or 1300s. I forget exactly which. And that could be wrong, but they hit England in 1066, as you know. But nonetheless, they were the Irish who were known as the Irish who became more Irish than the Irish themselves. And those are named like Butler and Pendergrass and any number of others. You could just type in a web search for Norman names.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You get a list a mile long. Brown is one of them, but it's like with an E, like Jackson Brown. And,
right.
And those are the Galway Browns.
Right.
But they're all related. Every Brown in the British Isles comes from that single or couple of people named Lebrun who came over with William the Bastard.
You sure know your history. That's for sure.
I know a bit of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Studied it. I love it. I love history.
Yeah.
I find that we can learn, by reading history, we learn about ourselves to a very great extent. And if you read history and try and read through it and use your imagination and put yourself back there, it just makes it all the better. I have one book called A Distant Mirror, The Calamitous 14th Century. And it's written by the same lady who wrote The Guns of August. And her name is escaping me because I have this computer screen-induced aphasia, which
sounds
drives
like
me nuts sometimes.
It sounds like somebody sent you some messages there, huh?
That's no big deal. I can turn the sound off that way. I see them come in, but there's no... I always have Skype running.
Yeah, I've got my sounds off at all times.
Let me see.
Because I get plenty of messages myself, and I don't want them coming through air. That's
okay.
For sure.
Okay, there we go. Yeah. Yeah, that's some cool stuff.
No, but it's a little interesting what Billy happened to mention about the Irish famine. Some might call it a famine, Patrick, but others might actually call it a genocide.
And to a great degree, it was ginned up. It was not something that just naturally happened. I am more and more tending to believe that there were causal forces behind it in order to depopulate Ireland and not to kill them all, but to force them to immigrate to America.
Yes. Well, the allegation is that the official history says that, I think, 1.5 million Irish died in the so-called famine, but I think the historical accurate statistics show that it was upwards of 18 million.
I'm not sure there was 18 million people in Ireland back then. That's a big number. So check that number.
Well, it was over a five-year period, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay. At any rate, I've read some very good books on the famine, and it was quite some time back, maybe in the very late 80s, early 90s. But yes, I know about it.
Yeah.
I know exactly what was going on. And it was a very, very sad affair. And a lot of them be on ships leaving Yall, Y-O-U-G-H-A-L.
Uh-huh.
Yugal, but it's pronounced Yall. And that's the harbor. It's Cork. And that's one of the big harbors out of Ireland. And they would pile them on the coffin ships. And you would, they were called coffin ships because more people would die on them than actually made it to New York.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Or wherever they happened to be going. And it was just a mess. Some few came to New Orleans. And that's why for the longest time, down Lower Magazine in Chapultepec Street, there was an area known as the Irish Channel.
Huh.
And back in the Civil War, there was a group of Irish that came out of there, and they were known as Lee's Tigers, like General Lee's Tigers.
Yeah.
And even Stonewall Jackson was impressed with them. They were pretty good. So there was a lot of, in the war between the states, there was a lot of Irish shooting at a lot of other Irish.
Uh-huh.
Was happening, and a lot of Scotch-Irish. But they have these myths to the effect that the South is mostly Scotch-Irish, and that's just not true. And all I will just invite you to go to any town in the South and open up the phone book and look at the names. And it's going to be mostly English. It's a persistent myth, and a myth only means story, doesn't mean false. But in this case, it is false. There is some Scotch-Irish, you know, and those were the people who came from either Northern Ireland or from Lowland Scotland or Lowland Scotland via Northern Ireland and then to the States. And they were a different bunch than your typical Irish. However, they were just as nuts. And often they would put families of Scotch-Irish between German families and between the First Nation settlements where there was squabbling and there was predation going on. They would put families of Scotch-Irish because the Scotch-Irish would shoot back.
Yeah.
They would give as good as they got.
Well, they don't call them fighting for nothing.
Right, right. It's not just the Irish, but the Scotch-Irish and the Scots, too. Another interesting story is that there were so many Irish who had gone to Glasgow,
Scotland, yeah,
that finally the police just couldn't handle it anymore. All the wildness, and it was beyond there. So what did they do? They took a little trip up north, and they got some Highlanders.
Yeah.
And the Highlanders came down, and they whipped things back into shape in short order.
Yeah. So,
all kind of, you know, interesting little snippets of history that you can pick up. If you read, I don't even know where I get half this stuff because I've read so many books on it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of it would have been library books, and so they're not sitting on my shelf, so I do have quite a few.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I haven't read a lot of history, but I've read enough that to understand that what government puts out isn't really a truthful
Oh, heavens.
Depictation, you know.
No, far from it. It's, it. that's just what not to read is a textbook. You can leave that one unopened.
I got a funny little story for you, Patrick. It's been about 5.5, 6 years ago now when I was in college. I thought I was going to get drawn and quartered or thrown out of a history class for arguing that the Japanese were trying to surrender with the coalition forces for as far as 8 months behind, 8 months before they dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and everybody, you know, I would provide links to sources and stuff like that, and all they would do was hurl out the ad hominem attack straw man argument and try to say that the official story doesn't really show that in the history books, you know.
As it's the word official being...
Official, yes.
Well, there's your fulcrum right there.
Well, you know, just because some government official will go out in front of a podium in front of the cameras and tell you a lie and then take his government stamp and stamp it as a truth, it doesn't make it the truth.
Of course not. And I like to say, just because you say it so doesn't make it so.
That's right.
And you gotta, you know, on the one hand, it's really too bad that they wound themselves up in that position because they need a paycheck.
Who is that?
The ones who are ones who are hurling invectives at you.
Yes. Okay.
They need their paychecks, and so they dare not veer. And not a jot or a tittle off the party line.
Well, you know? I just, a lot of people out here on the internet, whether it be Facebook or something like that, they just have trouble believing that there are corporations set up just to be trolls. They have hundreds and hundreds of employees, and all they do is have troll accounts to attack the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they do. I mean, the way I understand it, they make some pretty good money at it too. So
I can easily believe that. Yeah. I wonder what it's called. Oh, probably some name that would, you know, you're not going to say Troll Central or anything.
Right.
Something very innocuous.
Well, some of those advertisements that you see on Facebook and the internet, work out of your home, earn $47 an hour. Doing this and doing that, working off the computer, you know?
Right, that's it. Uh-huh. A lot of them are. Some of them aren't. Some of them are just really duh jobs, like bugging people. You know, I'm glad I don't have that landline anymore. It got to where I couldn't even pick it up.
Oh, they're calling cell phones too, though.
Well, they don't know my number yet. and it'll get to be, if I don't recognize the number, I'll just click it off. But that, or I'll just... Not like if I'm recording or if I'm doing something, I can't stop and be interrupted. That's why I don't like the telephone.
Uh-huh.
It interrupts you. You know, if I'm not doing anything, then it's someone I know. Wow, nice to hear from you. But just to have that sucker going off, I mean, I got things to do. I'm busy.
Uh-huh.
What are you doing calling me? You know, maybe I'll start calling you. See how you feel.
Uh-huh. Well, most of the time you can't even return them calls because they say something like, this system isn't allowed to take calls or...
Yeah, right. I know. They got their back ends covered for sure.
Yeah, they got us blocked from calling them. That's for sure.
Now, if you see that, well, then you know for sure. That's a dead giveaway. And then maybe you can record the number into your phone and have it go to a no pickup action or something. I don't know.
Well, I have an iPhone and I'm able to block any incoming number actually. So,
well, there you go. That's what I'm getting at. Yeah. I have an iPhone 5S, but I think they're up to a 7 now.
I don't know. I'm not sure if the 7, I know the Galaxy 7 has come out, but okay. I don't think the iPhone 7 has. I know they're up to a 6 Plus. That's what I have.
That's a nice one. Is it the big one?
Yes.
Those are nice. I like that. Because I have an iPad mini, and even though it is very, very cozy. It is still, if it were a little smaller for like reading forums and stuff, like I like to lie on bed in bed and do.
Uh-huh.
The size of the iPhone 6 would be almost perfect because I can do it on the iPhone 5, but, and even the print's big enough, but still the 6 would be really nice, especially for like YouTubes. And you put your earbuds in and the sound is really good.
Oh, it is. It is.
And so you hear full bass and everything.
We're getting off on all kinds of directions.
That's what being on the radio with me is like.
Is it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I confess. Yeah, I'm guilty of that. Go ahead. Well, it's your show.
No, that's okay. I mean, you must look at it and read a lot of material, a lot of different things.
Yeah, and if I do a show, either I'll select a strange topic. I've been doing a number of shows lately just myself. I don't quote-unquote have a show, but I've been stepping in a lot lately because one of my producers is away this month. And then I did one day before yesterday. Because Barbara, my other host, she had an emergency.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I've had some emergencies here too, and you stepped up.
Yeah. And so I'm used to just getting on the mic and going for it. But if I do that, you know, it's going to be a stream of consciousness thing. If it's not too objectionable, you know, I don't want to bore anybody.
Yeah.
I haven't
even attempted to develop the skill of just rambling off at the mouth for 54 minutes at a time.
Well, I'll tell you what a lot do. Is they will just go to different, as long as you're using a computer, go to different news sites and find an interesting up-to-date piece of news, something that's real new, and read it over the air if it's very interesting, and then comment on it, you know, editorialize as you're reading. That's very typical, you know.
And, uh-huh.
It's good because you can get some good shows that way. Because it has everything to do with your delivery, and your delivery can really slam your message home. And that's what I've noticed.
Uh-huh.
I don't tend to do that, but there's enough that do, you know, so that's why I don't deal with political subjects or religious subjects as such. You know, like I call my show on Thursday, not for public consumption, because it's really not.
Right, yeah.
Besides, I'm up against Sean David Martin on the other channel, and I know he's got most of the audience anyways, and that's fine with me, you know.
Uh-huh.
I have a good time, and I just hope the one or two that are listening to me do too. I can talk, and I can take calls. You know, I'll do both. Someone calls in, I'll yammer with them. But playing music all my life and always being in front of a microphone, I'm just used to, you know, talking out to people. And I've been a reader, a lector in church before, and I'm used to it, I guess you could say.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So when I get up there, like in church or something, and I look, it's like playing fiddle, and you're by yourself, you know, and you know you're there to have fun and to make them have fun. So you just kind of look out at your audience, whether it's with a fiddle in hand or with a piece of Bible before you and piece of scripture, and I think they're mine.
Yeah.
And I just relax and take my time and speak slowly and clearly, you know, and it works.
Yeah, certainly does. How long you been doing this then? How long you been with
Benmatalk?
Yeah.
I've been here about 3 years. I've been moderating ever since about 3 years ago. I started moderating a couple months after I was here. And then I got into producing. And so I'm producing about 7 shows right now. And that's on these shows, on more than half of I'm kind of like the co-host, and the host really enjoys that, you know, unless there's a specific guest, and I kind of stay out the way. I just stay about here. I see what's going on, but I'm fielding calls, making comments into the text box and things like that, or copy-pasting questions out of the chat into the text box.
Right.
Just producer stuff.
And yeah.
then I get rid of the server when the show's over. But my computer holds Skype real well. And so I think I've only had Skype drop on me once for all the shows I've done.
Uh-huh.
But more than seven, actually. I'm getting kind of full up. It's busy because that's 14 hours.
Huh, yeah.
I love doing it, you know. I mean, there's no pay, but that's okay. I mean, it's its own reward, I think.
Yeah, it is. I think I must be coming up doing a show here for 3 years now. I actually got introduced to the Irish network over there, People's Internet Radio. It was in June of 2013, and it really wasn't much longer than that, maybe 2 or 3 months, when I got introduced to Hawk. So I think probably in the fall I'll be coming up on 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the nice thing about this program, this station, is that we don't have those darn corporate commercials every 7.5 minutes. Yeah. And we don't have that super high production sound, which really grates on me. It drills into your soul, is what
yeah.
it does. And we don't have that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we can just be ourselves and talk. And I think that actually pulls people in to a much greater degree.
Uh-huh.
As long as you do something that is interesting and you're honest and you're, you know, you're feeling what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't have a producer behind you or behind a piece of glass or something telling you that you can't talk about that or you can't talk about this or you can't talk about that. Like, I don't know. Like,
right. No. That's the, there's only we can't do the F word.
Yeah, can't talk.
I mean, it's nicer if you don't curse, but I mean, if some curse words are acceptable, but we don't go. There's a couple words that can't be said, and there's the only topic that's absolutely verboten is flat Earth.
Well, I can't blame you there.
That's not allowed.
Well, you know,
me.
Anybody that wishes to talk about it on some of the other networks, they're more than welcome to.
Yeah, just, knock yourself out.
They're
you know?
Just going to get attacked, you know.
Please, knock yourself unconscious. Go to sleep. Oh, my goodness. So, you know, I think, you know, the station's been going 5 years. Oh, it's over 5 years, and that's pretty good. No other internet station has that record. And we are the biggest. To my knowledge.
Uh-huh. And, well, I did mention that, I think I mentioned last time we spoke about it, Vinnie Byrne over there in Ireland, he's been doing it for 7 years now on the internet, so.
Yeah, but does he have a whole station network with like 90, you know, 90
no.
hosts?
And, no.
You know, that's what we have. We, as a station, we've been doing it longer.
Yeah, okay. I see.
We got 90 hosts, 94 hosts maybe, and two studios running 24/7.
Uh-huh.
And it's either a live show or a well-chosen replay. And so, and,
yep.
and we have, and Nighthawk is a little more than very bright, you know. He's quite effective in most things that he does.
Uh-huh.
Most, if not all. And so he's, he does a real good job.
Yeah.
And I admire him. And he's one busy person.
Uh-huh. I do like the fact that, you know, you can just grab a studio right off of Skype and you don't really have to. Although I do have the software where I can run a network.
Yeah. Yeah, but Skype is a good way to go because it's available to so many people. Doesn't cost anything if you get the free version, and that's kind of what we use. And, yeah. And the audio quality is just, there's nothing like it. You can always tell a telephone call coming in because the audio is just awful.
Yes. Yes.
Speaking on Skype.
Yeah. Well, Billy's cell phone was pretty good, though.
Yeah. Good cell phones are a lot better, but like, you know, telephones, or you can really hear that, you know, blary, brassy kind of phone sound. It's
yep.
very, like 2 bits or something. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know if Skype is transmitting about 8 bits. If you try to put, I don't know, I can get a lot of music because I play some of my own music when I start the shows.
Uh-huh.
And There's some pretty intense, fairly intense mixes, fairly busy mixes. And they come over okay. There's a way you can do it through your mood. In Skype, you have your mood statement, so to speak, and you can hook iTunes into that. If you look in preferences, you'll see where to do that. And that'll allow you to play recorded stuff. Now, there's certain, because of FCC and things like that, you know, you can't play copyrighted stuff, but what I play is my own music.
Uh-huh.
I have the copyright. It's indie.
You know, speaking of music, we're probably going to be hearing it at any time.
Your site.
Well, I just happened to look down there, so thank you, Patrick, for filling the last hour.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve.
All right. And see everyone soon. I'm Stephen Roberts. This has been Canceled Like a Ball. Good night, everyone.